This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Underground, overground, wumbling free. The Wombles of Wimbledon, common are we. Making good use of the things that we find. Things that the everyday folks leave behind.
Good evening. You are listening to Love Sport Radio. No win in 7, just 1 in 11. Gillingham up next. They're unbeaten in 15. The best record in the EFL as things stand. But Joe Piggott's reached 100. So that's good, isn't it? We can talk about that. We can speak about the bond issue. We've got plenty coming up over the course of the next hour or so on this, the AFC Women and Fans Show. Me, sadly, back. Sorry, 9 years podcast, boys. I am back in the hot seat, much to the dismay of AFC Wimbledon fans. Matt Beadle alongside George Jones. Hello, George.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Good to see you back.
And a 0-0 draw.
Yeah.
That is the first thing that we're going to speak about, but we're going to get onto it in a moment because first we want to hear from Glyn Hodges.
It's always the same, you know, we go up, we've got to withstand some pressure, we're not going to have games all our own way, we just hope to cause a few teams a problem, which we did. We had chances, I think Adam Roscoe, the goalie, made a good save, and thought Rudy got pulled down for a box for a penalty. Piggs has got to throw his left foot on it, you know, there's chances there, but it was, I mean, I think that the wind, the conditions ruined it for both teams, and I think all the mistakes, all the problems were not misjudging the ball, the ball taking a gust of wind away. So in the conditions, you know, I felt, you know, it was a fair point.
That was Glyn Hodges there, George, after the draw at the weekend. Now let's get into this, because it was a blustery day, wasn't it? Chris Maxwell, the Blackpool goalkeeper, has bemoaned the conditions. He cannot wait for it to be over. We all can't wait to see these storms out of the way. What's it like for football fans, by the way? Standing in stands with all this going on.
Well, it depends where you are. I mean, thankfully we were at home last weekend but the weekend before that, during the first of these major storms, we were in Rotherham, and that was really not a pleasant experience, even at the best of times, but especially during a storm. Some of these grounds you go to, where the wind gets in, it swirls around a bit, and it's a miracle any football's got played at all over the last 2 weeks in the lower divisions.
So, since I last saw you guys, it's been a while now, I suppose. It's been a few weeks, hasn't it? So, let's talk about the form, because I know you've spoken about it in other shows, but I don't know. So, we're looking at it, what? No win in 7, just 1 win in 11 for the boys. Tranmere getting a result, of course, against Shrewsbury in the week 2. 1 game in hand, 4 points adrift of AFC Wimbledon, 1 place above those relegation spots. The feeling in amongst the crowd at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's, to be honest, obviously there's a bit more panic about after Tuesday when Tranmere got a win where no one really expected them to get a win, especially the way they started the game. It looked like they'd thrown it away, but then obviously got the win at the end. So it's a bit more concerning there, but I think there's still optimism. I mean, we're 4 points clear. We're 5 points clear, effectively 6. And we're in a position where when we play them towards the end of March, if we beat them, then all of a sudden it's 8 points clear and we're safe. But people are starting to look at the fixture run-ins. We will be doing so later in the show. And it's really starting to build a bit of momentum now and making sure that we match Tranmere every weekend so they don't gain any points on us.
Yeah, certainly. Like for like is definitely the key. The Blackpool game itself, I mentioned Chris Maxwell there, who's come in for Blackpool, signed by Simon Grayson, of course. He's had a bit of a peripatetic career. Hadn't played since November 2018, I think, before he signed for Blackpool on loan in and around the January transfer window. But he's come in. He's had a very good performance at the weekend, hasn't he? Pretty much kept Blackpool in it.
Yeah, he had a couple of good saves. He was one of those where both goalies were probably the two contenders for man of the match, in my view, where they both kept their teams in it. And as a goalie, in those conditions, it's nearly impossible, really, as a keeper to try and claim crosses and predict long shots, etc. But both Joe Day and Chris Maxwell did really well. Chris Maxwell made Team of the Week in the Football League paper. And it just goes to show how well he played and how unlucky we were, to be honest, not to win. I mean, if you look at it, both teams had chances. Blackpool had the best chance of the game where Nathan D'Alfonso tried to dribble it into an empty net and somehow messed it up. But we had more chances, And I think overall it was a good performance from Maxwell that sort of denied us a win.
So Nathan Delfonso's chance, right? Messed it up.
Yeah.
What are we saying on this? Because I seem to be in a minority here and no one really seems to be talking about it. That's a penalty.
Well, on Delfonso?
Yeah. He gets clipped by Scott Wagstaff.
No.
He gets clipped. I'm pretty sure of it, no?
No, nothing in it. As a striker, if you get the ball sort of 6 yards out with an empty goal and you've got two or three touches, it don't matter if you're fouled, you should still be putting it away.
No. It doesn't matter if you're fouled. Okay, so regardless of that issue altogether, let's isolate that incident. You're saying if a striker gets fouled in the box because he's got two or three touches before, it shouldn't be a penalty.
No, it should be a penalty, but I'm saying in this situation it wasn't because there was no foul. Mm. But even so, it's a non-issue because he should have scored anyway.
He should have scored, but I think as he was bringing his leg back to score, Scott Wagstaff just clipped him on the heel and as a result he kicked the ground.
Yeah, I didn't see that. I don't think anyone's picked that up and I don't think that's a real issue.
I think you should look at those highlights, George.
Yeah, I'd rather not.
All right, we're joined on the line now by Kevin Borras, another member of the 9 Years podcast, of course. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
Good, thank you. Great to have you with us. Great to hear those dulcet tones again.
Thank you. Thank you. You're so kind.
Talk to me about your opinion of Saturday. Do you match that of George Jones?
It was a strange game in that we had, I think we had 7 corners in the first 6 minutes. And we didn't have really another meaningful attack until the end. We had a huge amount of time, like 77 minutes, where we didn't really do an awful lot. But we still came out of that game thinking we should have won it. So it was kind of a strange experience, really. But Blackpool, I do think Blackpool have got the best player in League One, is Connor Ronan on loan from Wolves. What a player. Very, very good player. Just had so much time on the ball. A lot of skill, was strong and quick and sharp. The kind of player that everyone in the Championship would be loving to have on loan next season. Very, very good player. So look out for him, Connor Ronan. And scored a cracking goal for them against Bolton on Tuesday. But I think he's the best player I've seen this season.
Okay.
So that was a highlight of somebody else's player.
I was going to say, it's very unlike an AFC Wimbledon show to mention another player as the highlight, Kevin.
Yeah, but we didn't have a huge amount of highlights, other than, as George said, Joe Day did well. It was one of those games where you just kind of was grateful at the end that we didn't lose it. And it was, in the light of Tuesday's sort of surprise result, it was a very, very good point.
Yeah, it was indeed. You mentioned Joe Day there, and you guys mentioned him, not me, so we'll talk about him. Joe Day, George.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's been absolutely incredible ever since he came in right from the start. From my opinion, he was brilliant right from day one, but I know a couple of people thought he took a couple of games to get going. But he's probably been our man of the match, or certainly one of our two or three contenders for man of the match, pretty much every game he's played. And that's telling. And we, you know, last year we stayed up because of who we got in on loan for the second half of the season in goal. Nathan Trott, he did pretty well at the start of the season, but there were sort of flaws in this game, which we discussed at length. And I think Joe Day is a much more experienced keeper. And I do think he is saving his points. That's going to be key at this running, having experienced sort of, let's be honest, a high quality League One goalie with experience is so essential at this stage of the season for a team in our position.
Indeed it is. Kwezi also getting a start up top, George. Now, I want to get your thoughts on this one because I know that a much maligned Mr. Appiah in these here parts is, you know, thought of in certain ways around the fan base, but he got a start.
Yeah, he did, and he's one of those players who, after what he did, he came on and got a goal from the... He got a last-minute equaliser via a penalty away to Rotherham a couple of weeks ago, and he's just been starting to build up a bit of momentum. Really, you look at what he did, he didn't really do much on Saturday, and he's one of those players who he does get a lot of criticism because of how much he's available for us because of his injury record. And I do think he's a high-quality player when he gets a run of games. It's a question of, does it take those 3 or 4 games that will take him to get going? Do we have that time in the running, or are we better off sticking with Pickett and Pinnock, or maybe giving Roscoe a bit more game time between now and the end of the season?
Speaking of Pickett, Kevin, I believe so. He's 100 up for AFC Wimbledon now.
Yeah.
Finally, yes. I think the club forgot because they didn't mention it on the day of the game. It was only mentioned afterwards. But yeah, Joe's done well for us. I mean, if you think that last season he was our top scorer by some distance, and there was interest in him in January, supposedly for a couple of bigger clubs from higher divisions. This season, of course, he went through the personal issues that we don't know what they are. We don't need to know what they are, but it's affected his form, and he's come back and a much better form, looks much more, looks his body language is he looks a lot happier with what's going on. I just think he works so much better with the target man, and we don't have one. And he's not a target man. Yeah, he's 6 foot two, but he doesn't play like a taller player. We said this before. He's not that great in the air. And we talked about last week on, he's competed for something like 570 aerial duels this season, more than any other player, and only won about nine. And I just think that he really did work well with James Hansen. If we stay up, and if we keep him, he would be so much better next year for him with a bigger player alongside him. Because it's almost unfair to see him playing a completely alien role to him that he doesn't enjoy.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. We do need sort of a number nine to come in the summer, especially if we stay up, to play alongside Piggott. Because you look at him, we've got a lot of players who can play, you know, just off the big man. Pretty much, in fact, all of our strikers at the club prefer to play off a big man. And we just, it's so obvious that's what we're lacking. And you just got to hope we're able to get one in. Because Pig's stats, you know, when he was playing alongside Hansen versus when he's not playing alongside a number nine, the difference is pretty clear. And, you know, it's clear that that's going to be a target. It's just a question of whether we can afford one of high enough quality to come in the summer that will make any difference.
Yeah. Also true. I'll tell you what is going to be interesting. Last season, around this time, the 9 years team, we all put together a very amusing Excel spreadsheet featuring the sort of the last 10 games of the season for what turned out to be 10 different teams. And we kind of plotted, working our way through the fixes, how many points we thought we got. We thought we'd stay up by 3 points. We ended up staying up by, obviously, goal difference. But that took a lot of work for those many, many fixtures and 10 teams, you know, 10 cells we used for each one. This season, it's going to be two, isn't it?
Yeah.
There won't be 10 teams involved in the relegation fight. It's let's be fair, it's us and Tranmere. Rochdale, maybe. That game in hand, of course, they've got, is Tranmere at home. And then everyone should have played 34 by now. We've played 33. So Rochdale's two in hand is us at home and Tranmere at home. They will be looking at that as 6 points and get themselves out of it. So I think our end of season sort of panic spreadsheet is going to be two teams in it.
For a second there, Kim,
saving ourselves a lot of trouble.
I thought you were going to say that you've been working on a 9 years podcast calendar. I was like, oh crikey, surely no one wants to see that.
No. Well, to be fair, I think Stu and Nick should both be marked because they share a birthday. Nick and Stu's birthday is next Thursday. They share a birthday, which is kind of bizarre, isn't it? But I think we'd have a joint one of March. George, I think you should be June. I think you in the summer with no games. That'd be nice for everybody.
Yeah, that one where everyone can forget to sort of change your calendar over and move straight over into August for the start of the new season.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I'll be July then.
So a two-horse relegation race indeed. Very, very interesting. Of course, there has been some rather incredible form from a certain team in North Bucks, which I think no one expected. But AFC Wimbledon and Tranmere there in 20th and 21st place, respectively. Next up on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show, we're going to be talking about the bond issue.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
AFC Wimbledon Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the 9 years podcast crew. Kevin Borras is on the line. George Jones is in the studio. And gents, now we're going to get into, of course we are, it's the bond issue. I like the way that you describe it as well, George, the bond issue. Where are we at? What is the current total? Talk to me.
Well, it's one of those where when you were last in with us, it wasn't a great looking outlook. The bond had just started getting going. It was starting to pick up a bit of momentum. But when it closed a couple of weeks ago, it had just passed £5 million. They've decided to extend it until May the 14th, which is a very symbolic day for all at the club because it's the anniversary of our FA Cup win. And at the moment, it's on about £5.3 million, so it's slowed down a bit. But they're doing a major event next Thursday to try and relaunch it and give a bit more, a new breath of life into it. And that's coming up on Thursday. And I think Kevin's going to say more about that.
Are you, Kevin?
Well, yes, I am now. Yes, thank you very much for that. So basically, it's a celebration. It's being held in Wimbledon Broadway. I can't remember the name of the place it's going to be. I'm so sorry.
Tunnel 267.
Is it Tunnel 267? There you go.
Which is the old Bat. What used to be the Batsford Arms.
The old Batsford Arms, indeed. Yeah. So it's kind of, again, a symbolic place to have it. But it's a celebration of the fact that we've achieved this extraordinary feat of raising £5.3 million, which if you add it to what we raised for Cedars, we've raised £7.7 million in you know, in two sort of crowdfunding bond exercises, which is quite extraordinary for a club of our size and a fan base of our size. And it's just a night to celebrate what's gone on, but also to look at keeping it going, because once it hit over 5 million, it did slow down a lot, because that was the target. We met the target. Anyone meets a target, you kind of think, well, we've done our job, but we still want people to go back into their savings. Some people robbed their children's savings, which is a fantastic thing to do. Say robbed, borrowed their children's savings, not robbing at all. People had their children's college fund. Somebody put the money they'd set aside for their wedding. It's extraordinary. This is the lengths that people go to, and how committed people are to this football club. And I'm sure there's other fans of other clubs that are just as committed. We do know that. Newcastle fans will probably say they're far more committed than we are. Great, but we have raised huge amounts of money, and this is a very nice night at which to do it. So yeah, for next Thursday, 7 p.m. Tunnel 267, Wimbledon Broadway. Get along there and celebrate the bond and keep it going. Sadly, George and I can't be there because we're doing the show.
Oh no! Crikey, what have Love Sport done? No, surely we can find a replacement for that one evening. I'm sure this is an important event for you guys to go to. And I have to say, whilst I haven't been on the show, of course, been keeping abreast of all the news. To be fair, we've had Ray Armfield's been on the League One and Two post-match fan show. We've had Ida Heller on the show as well, and they've been speaking very highly about the situation at the club. And I've got to say, gents, George, this must be great to be an AFC Wimbledon fan at this time. I know it is troubled times for the club, but to see everybody pull together as much as they have, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find this, certainly at another League One club that I can think of.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, when we were on this show in December, we were genuinely worried that we wouldn't have a club in 6 months' time. And now for us to have a prosperous future looking brighter than it did even 12 months ago, let alone 6 months, that just shows how well we've done. Like Kevin said, we've got raised £7.7 million in 6 months as a fan base. That's, I believe, over 50% more than any other British football club has raised in sort of a fundraising crowd share scheme, which was Norwich when they were doing their new project. And it just goes to show how important the model is and how important our ownership structure is to the fans, and how keen we are to keep it going, and how important our football club is to the community. And the £7.5 million is such a symbolic target, because back in early December, we were told that's how much the soul of our club is worth when people tried to sell us out to these three mystery investors who have since run away. And the fact that if we can get to £7.5 million quid, that would just be such an achievement, and it would go so far to say fan ownership is alive, well, and is the model that other clubs need to follow.
So, Kevin, in addition to that, Kevin, sorry, just quickly, just butting very quickly. It's open to overseas investors now as well.
It is. Yes, it was open to overseas investors, I think, one day before it closed, just for various loopholes that the thing had to go through. But yeah, so anybody can join in. We're presuming the majority of people are Wimbledon fans, but you don't have to be. You haven't got to be a football fan. You could be someone who just wants to do something good. Someone who you will get your money back. That's the point. If you are a wealthy person who likes dabbling in interesting projects, you'll get your money back, and you can tell us or tell the club how much money you want to put in and how much you want to get back again and when you want it back. I mean, that's putting money into a bond scheme. There's always a risk. We have to point this out. There is a risk, of course, but you can have it back in 20 years' time at 4% interest rate, which is pretty good, or you can have it back in 10 years' time, no interest rate, but zero interest rate. And then whatever we raise, that the commercial loan that we have to get, and anything that eats into that £11 million that we were short is the point. Now, I guessed £3.37 million as how far we'd get, and people laughed at me and said, no, we'd never get that far.
Hang on a second. Kevin.
Another £2
million. Just a quick... Yeah. 3.37, that's very specific.
We did a prediction game.
We were specific because there was eight of us in the group.
Oh, you had a game.
We said we can't just say 3 million, so we had two decimal places. And I'm very, very pleased that I'm £2 million out that way. I hate being wrong, but I'm very happy that I'm that wrong. So tomorrow I'm going to be driving past the stadium site. I've not seen it yet. I was almost going to put to the point where it's like seeing your wife's wedding dress before the wedding day. I've done that twice. I was thinking, I don't want to see the ground before it's open, but I happen to be driving past tomorrow, so I'm going to stop and have a look. But it's getting so real to the point where the five of us that stand together at King's Meadow, we've actually decided we're going to decide on Saturday where we're going to sit. So it's got to that point where 4 months ago, we were thinking we won't be sitting anywhere. We won't have a football club to support. And now we're looking at where we're going to sit. Do we want to sit in one of the temporary stands opposite the main stand so we can look at the main stand? Or do we want to be in the main stand and look out over a better view of the pitch, but with smaller stands? We're even discussing little details like that. So that my cynicism has disappeared completely.
So, okay, George, talk to me about this game that you played, because I'm painting a picture here in my mind. So you all sitting around trying to guess how much you're going to invest, so, and you've got certain rules and regulations.
Yeah. So of the eight of us that were in the group chat, we all had to play a little prediction game to see how close we'd get. It was to 2 decimal points to try and, you know, make it a bit more interesting. And Kevin said 3.37 and was by a considerable distance the highest one. I'm ashamed to say I said 2.5 if we're lucky. And it just goes to show, you know, even Wimbledon fans who are by our nature quite optimistic because we've done the impossible so many times, we've somehow done it again by getting... Well, if we achieve the 7.5 million, which we could get close to, it'll be more than double what one of our highest predictions, which is mad when you say it like that.
It is quite incredible. And actually, when you just look at what's been raised in a short space of time as well, so what, 5 million in a month, 1 million in the last 4 days before it closed?
Yeah, that's...
Yes. You know,
it's remarkable, and it's... It was way beyond anyone's expectations, because at the start of it, they were saying 5 million is the beyond optimistic target, 3 million is our realistic goal. And we breezed past 3 million relatively quickly, and then it just kept going and kept going and kept going and kept going. And it was just, it was one of those where had we set a target of 7.5 million originally, I think we might have got there. It was just the momentum was so strong at the time when it was still going and until we reached that goal. It just goes to show how motivated our fans are to get home and to make sure that when we get home, we're a fan-zone club and that we've done it the right way.
And
almost to the point where whatever division we're in next season, I'm not going to say it doesn't matter because it does, but it matters less than having that ground and playing in it. We would love to start next season, first game of the season. I'm going to joke here to North Eastern fans, Middlesbrough, right? Middlesbrough got a good chance of getting relegated. Imagine starting that brand new stadium against Middlesbrough, sold out ground. However, it's just as likely we'll be playing Morecambe or Grimsby or Crawley. Right, it's gonna take the edge off it a bit, but it doesn't matter. The fact it's our ground and we're there and our future is safe, that's far more important than what could be one season back in League Two.
Yep, completely agree with you. And George, just before we move on, have you got an idea of the number of people who have helped to get to this figure?
Yeah, it's not an incredibly large number of amount, really. It's actually a relatively small number when you consider, you know, how much money has been raised. And that's the thing. The Seeders campaign was a huge number of individuals all putting in quite small amounts, if you look at the average. Whereas this campaign is just, well, I'm not going to say a few because it was still a lot, but it was people putting in a lot of money, and that's what's made the difference this time, because it was really, it's this or bust, and people have worked so hard and taking money, like Kevin said, out of their wedding plans, or taking money out of savings accounts or out of their kids' savings accounts to put money into this. And I know people who are not taking holidays for the next couple of years to do this. And it just goes to show how important it is and how even a small number of people can make such a big difference to their local football clubs. And that's why it's so important the fan ownership model's proved a success.
Indeed it is. An incredible achievement, guys. We'll continue to update those listening on that as and when here on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. And throughout the week, of course, as well, here on A Love Sport. But George, now we are moving on to your favourite time of the week. It's the Academy update. The under-23s losing on penalties to Brentford in the London Senior Cup.
Yeah, it was one of those games where it was on Tuesday. For some absolutely bizarre reason, it was arranged for a 2 p.m. kick-off, which made it virtually impossible for most fans to get to. But for those of us who did go, it was a really good experience. We were very young, much younger than Brentford's team, who they put out. And we put in a really good shift. We went a goal down early, but managed to get it back to 2-1 up before they scored a late equaliser to go 2-2, before eventually we lost on penalties. Finlay McNabb and Zach Robinson were our goal scorers. But for me, the players who really stood out were Jack Madlin, who's played a couple of games in the first team off the bench for the first team this year. He played in midfield, and it's the first time I've seen him slot into a midfield. He normally plays centre-back. But he looked so calm, so assured, and he broke up the game well. I thought it was really promising, and I thought he played really well. But for me, man of the match was Hussein Belair, who's been on the bench a couple of times for the first team already this year. And on the right back, he's a right wing back, but he's very attacking, very creative, very dangerous, very lively. He's definitely a work in progress, but for me, there's big things ahead in his future if he keeps working as hard as he is right now.
Good stuff. Well, here's what Robbo had to say after the game.
Yeah, just really, really disappointed for the lads again. I think I said that last time, but I thought we were excellent, to be honest. Literally everything we asked of them, they did, and more. I thought we were the better side throughout the game. They had a couple of moments in the first half where they hit us on the counter-attack down the left-hand side, and the goals come from a mistake, and Finn's held his hands up at half-time to the lads and apologised, but his reaction was great. He's come back, you know, got the goal to put us in front or equalise. But no, I thought we were good first half, maybe didn't carry enough of a threat, it's because we had good possession. But then second half, we just carried on taking the game to them, and you know, got ourselves in front. If I was being critical of anything, once we've turned one up, I think we could have seen the game out better, got a little bit deeper, and there were times we could have found our first pass, and we were a little bit sloppy, and those little things there lose momentum. There was a ball that was due to bounce out, and young Jack could have just smashed it down the pitch, and he's been a little bit nice. So those little things where we would have seen the game out. But I mean, you know, they're young lads, they learn that stuff.
Okay, George, that is it for the Academy update, mate. It was very short and sweet this week.
Yes, very short and sweet this week, because that was the biggest game for the club this week. And I thought Robbo put it better than I ever could on how we played and the prospects and what we can expect for them going forward.
Lovely stuff. Okay, well, this is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. Next up, we are taking a stroll around Lee One.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
It's the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. Me, Matt Beale, and George Jones from the 9 Years podcast. We're going to move on to a bit of a League One update in a moment or two, but just a very quick bit of breaking news, and that is that Arsenal look like they are crashing out of the Europa League at home to Olympiacos. Of course, 1-0 up in the first leg through that Alexandre Lacazette goal. Papa Abu Cisse put the visitors in the lead at the Emirates, and it went into extra time. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang equalising for Arsenal, but Youssef El Arabi has just latched on to a set piece from Olympiacos. They are into the second minute of stoppage time. It looks like that game is over. Arsenal out of the Europa League. Not full time yet, but literally a matter of seconds. Unbelievable scenes, George. Who would have thought it?
Certainly not anyone who's ever watched Arsenal before. It's completely unlike them to capitulate like they're doing right now. Ooh. It's certainly fun to see.
Wowzers. Fighting talk there from George. And we need a bit of fighting talk in League One as well, because, as Kevin said before, it is pretty much a two-horse race now for that final relegation spot. Let's go through it, George, because, listen, it's bonkers week in, week out in League One, and Saturday was no different.
Yeah, it's one of those games where Saturday, you look, Bolton lost, Southend lost. I think that's both of them pretty much gone, really. I know we've said it a couple of times before, but you look at it now, and Southend are now 15 points and a ridiculous number of goals from safety. I think Southend and Bolton are both completely dead and buried at this point in the season. So it is between us, Tranmere, and potentially Rochdale, but I think realistically just between us and Tranmere. Tranmere on Saturday obviously lost to Wickham, but then somehow beat Shrewsbury on Tuesday night. And that result sent shockwaves throughout the sort of the rest of the bottom of the league. Because that was one where, when we were looking at where are Tranmere picking up points, I don't think any of us expected Tranmere to get three on Tuesday night.
It was quite incredible, wasn't it, really? And actually, from a speculative punt down the pitch as well. To be fair, Scott Davies has had a lot of criticism this season, but set up that final goal. And what were your thoughts when that went in? I imagine you were following it live, and that one trickled into the net. Can't have been good.
No, it was gutting, really, because we looked at that and we were thinking, if Tranmere lose their game in one of their games in hand, it puts us in an even better position, because then you're looking at it as us being, you know, 8 points clear, effectively 9, you know, and we can start building momentum. Then all of a sudden, you're one game away from it being double figures, points clear, and then we still play them at the end of March. And that's such a good position, because where we are now is effectively, we're one weekend away from only being 1 point clear. And that psychologically is a big, big difference to where we were on Saturday evening. And you just got to hope they've got a tough game coming up this week on Saturday. They're at home to Fleetwood. And you just got to hope that, you know, they lose that. Because every week where they don't gain points on us is one fewer games they have to catch up on that points difference. And every game they lose is going to kill their goal difference even more than it already is.
Mm. Kevin, what are you saying on this?
Yeah. Yeah, I just, as soon as the game was over, I looked at their remaining fixtures and I looked at their last four is in, it's Oxford, I think it's Oxford, Rotherham, Sunderland and Doncaster.
No, Tranmere's last four.
Is that right?
No, Rotherham, Gillingham, yeah. Oxford and Peterborough.
Oh, okay. And they've also got Sunderland as well, I think. They've got a pretty horrible run. Ours isn't great. Our last game of the season is Coventry at home, which I'm hoping Coventry are promoted by then. They won't be quite as interested. But the first thing I did, as soon as that last-minute goal went, I didn't know it had gone in, because I'd presumed the game had finished in a draw. And then my son said, "Not got any bad news for you." I thought, oh, no, what's happening now? And he just showed me on his betting website that Tranmere had got a last-minute winner. So I thought, well, let's have a look. Let's not get too downhearted. Let's look at the last four games of the season. And we don't have a great last four games, but of the two, I would take ours all day long. I think it's going to be difficult. If we can still, if we're still above them by two or three points with four games to go, I'll be quite confident we'll stay up. But we've got to get to that point.
I mean, surely we're looking at the 21st of March here, really, yeah. Aren't we? I mean, to coin a cliche, yeah. Relegation six-pointer, like a nine-pointer. You don't really, can't call it anything. I mean, it's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that game is huge, and it's so important that we go into that game at least 4 or 5 points clear. So even if we do lose there, we've got a bit of breathing room. Because if we lose there and we're within 3 points of them, then we go below them and we're playing catch-up, then that's psychologically, when you go behind and you have to start fighting for points rather than trying to match other teams for points, that's a big change. And I don't know if we've got that in us this season. We don't have the leaders we did last year. But you look at it, and for me, the next four games for us versus them, their next four are Fleetwood, Accrington, Blackpool and Lincoln. Whereas our next four is Gillingham, Bolton, Doncaster and Tranmere. And realistically, if we can get 6 points from those next four, I can't see them getting those, you know, matching that over those four games. And for us, that could be huge. Because like I said, if we can build up a bit of a buffer to 8-9 points by the time we play them at the end of March, that's huge. Because that means that even if we do lose that day, we've still got a bit of breathing room.
And also, 3 days after we play Tranmere at home, we're away at Rochdale.
Yeah.
So, I hate using the phrase winnable games, because as Olympiacos have proved, any game's winnable. But you look at those games, you play the teams around you, you've got to look at the ones we should be winning. We probably aren't going to go to Rotherham and win. We're not going to go to Sunderland and win. And even their home game, they're going to be difficult games. Our season is marked, I think, by the teams around us. If you look at the teams at the bottom, we've got a point off of Bolton. We've got 4 points off Southend. We lost to Tranmere. We got a point. We beat Rochdale. We've lost to Accrington. We haven't done particularly well against. I mean, to be fair, we've only won 7 games all season, haven't we? So it's not like a huge surprise. But it's 7 wins, 10 draws, 16 defeats. Would normally you'd be in the bottom four. It's just so happens that this season it's a bottom three, and it would be. I think it'd be pretty hollow to stay up because of what happened to Bury. But I'll take it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This year is one of those years where. Any other year, I think us and Tranmere are buried by this stage of the season. You know, I think if this was last year, the way we've played this year and the way Tranmere have been so far this year, it's just with obviously the tragic situation at Bury, what happened to Bolton over the summer and, you know, the start they had to their season, which killed them before the season started effectively. And then obviously Southend, you know, probably, well, in the away game, they were probably the worst team I've seen since the Ryman League days. And
yes,
if you're going to have a bad year in League One, this is definitely the year to do it. And you just hope that we get lucky, finish fourth bottom and stay up, and then can try and build on this at a new stadium for next season.
Do you generally think we're much better this season than we were last season? We've got some slightly better results, but there were times last season I do think we played better than we've played this season. There's not much in it.
No, I think the team that we had at the second half of last season is better than the team we've got right now. But that was always going to be the case because you look at people like Ramsdale, like Seddon, etc. Those are players you're not going to replace in League One level. Especially when we had to cut the budget by letting players like Hansen go as well. But this year you've got to look at it. And this summer we've got an opportunity. I mean, Max Sanders is out of contract at Brighton. If we were able to pull off a coup and get him, that would be incredible. you know, Joe Day potentially, if we can manage to keep hold of him somehow. Again, you know, for me, I'm more optimistic heading into this summer's transfer window than I was heading into last summer's, because I think Glyn's got the opportunity to get it right, put a bit of experience into a very young team. And this is we mustn't forget, we're the youngest team by over a year in our league. And when we're in this situation, next year we'll be better than we are this year. That's pretty much guaranteed, because we'll be more experienced and we'll be a bit older and we'll have a bit more nous about us. And you just got to hope that as every year progresses, every year we progress, and each year it's enough to finish outside that bottom four and keep progressing higher and higher up the table.
But we've also got the pull of the new stadium. Although it's not, okay, it's not Tottenham Stadium. It's not a fantastic, you know, 60,000 all-seat stadium that's going to attract you. But if you're coming to, you know, you've got a choice of maybe going to Southend, maybe going to Crawley. Oh, no, brand new stadium. There must be some draw to go into a club who's just moving into a brand new stadium, pretty much on the side of their old stadium, they're coming home, etc., etc. That must be a draw to players, particularly players who are from the South London area. Maybe if you're born in Plymouth, maybe you don't care that much. But if you're from the South London area, it's a big story. Maybe your players that are now old enough or young enough that their dads might have told them about the story. I think we've got to use that emotional kind of heartstring tugging to get good players to come to our club and to say, right, be part of this amazing story. It's a new chapter. You know, here's a pen, start writing. God, I'm old. Here's a computer, start typing.
You can imagine you throwing quill and ink at them, Kevin.
An ostrich feather. Yeah.
Just looking at the run-in again, just to quickly go back to that, gents. For me, it's, you know, from watching AFC Wimbledon in the past couple of seasons, so it's those nothing games. That's what's huge. It's the game at home to Bolton on the 7th of March. Massive. Doncaster, you could say, away. I mean, listen, they've perhaps got faint hopes of reaching the playoffs, but when you look at that top 10, realistically, it's going to be any one of those 10, you would imagine. It is then going away to Lincoln. Lincoln on a pretty up and down period of form under Michael Abbotson. That one is one of those nothing games. It's Shrewsbury away on the penultimate day of the season. It's those nothing games because those teams there or thereabouts. And I know, Kevin, you're saying you're hoping Coventry are going to be done and dusted by the 3rd of May, but they could be sitting in second alongside Rotherham wanting to be champions of League One. So that is definitely going to play a part. We know what happens in the game on the 18th of April, of course, for various reasons. You go away to Wickham, there's a bit of rivalry there. It's home to Sunderland, they're chasing promotion, so that's key. Rochdale, another potential six-pointer. Tranmere, we've spoken about that one. So it's those nothing games, George. Those are the key ones.
Yeah, but I think it's one of those where those nothing games, they're also the hardest to win.
Exactly,
especially for a club like us, because we're a club that always does better against the bigger teams. When a team comes to attack us and brings the game to us, that's when we play our best football. That's when we get the best results. So for me, I'm more almost expecting us to win games against Coventry and Sunderland more than I am when we play games against Lincoln and Wickham. Because those are games where we've got an opportunity to do something in those matches, because we won't be expected to do anything. And when there's no pressure, that's when we get the results. As a club, it seems to be anyway. And if we're able to get that, like we got against Bristol Rovers on Boxing Day, if we're able to get a couple of those shock wins, that eases the pressure on those high-pressure games, which we will need to win. And the more points we have in the unexpected games means we can afford slip-ups against the likes of Tranmere, Bolton, Rochdale in games where we've all said we need to win that if we want to stay up. But we need the shock results as well to give us a bit of breathing space.
Yep, indeed you do. And that next shock result could come against Gillingham at the weekend. We're going to be discussing that next on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show here on Love Sport.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
AFC Wimbledon Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beale, and the boys from the 9 Years podcast. George Jones in the studio. Kevin Borras with us via the wonders of modern technology. Now, Kevin, before we get onto the game with Gillingham, I want to come to you with the news that the Premier League is launching a Hall of Fame. Now, the first inductees are going to be announced in March from the fan shows we've done this evening already. We've spoken to Southampton, we've done Watford, two current Premier League teams, of course. And we're just getting an idea from the fans who they might like to see in the Premier League Hall of Fame and whether they've even got players they believe deserve a right to be in the Premier League Hall of Fame. AFC Wimbledon now existing in League One, of course, but before that reformation, very much a top flight team, spent a few years in the Premier League as well, of course. Now, Kevin, you have fond memories
Founder
of that.
Members.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 1992. Yeah. Reading a very good book about that at the moment, by the way, called The Club. I'd recommend it to anybody. But who would you have to go in to that Hall of Fame if you had a choice of any Wimbledon player who appeared in the Premier League?
Chris Perry.
Oh, well, that's that simple feature done then. All right, we'll move on, shall we?
No, I mean, there's a number of candidates. I just think Chris Perry was one of the best players we've probably ever had. He didn't win an England cap in a time when Neil Ruddock did. And it's just one of those things, I think, he just plays for the wrong club. And even when he went to Tottenham, he didn't get in. But he was an iconic player because he was a fan and his dad was a fan. And when Chris Perry moved to Tottenham and then Charlton, his dad didn't go and watch him because he watched Wimbledon. I just think that's commitment. That's a proper family, isn't it? You'd look up some, probably Jason Yule, and obviously Vinny and Robbie Earl would be up there, but Vinny maybe not because he's, let's be fair, he wasn't a great footballer. I think we can all agree with that. Robbie Earl, maybe a bit tainted by what happened afterwards.
That's one of those names, isn't it? Everyone goes, Vinny Jones should be in the Hall of Fame. And if we're talking Premier League Hall of Fame, to be honest, I wouldn't really... I mean, a Wimbledon Hall of Fame, then yes, Vinny Jones, without a shadow of a doubt, goes into it. First Division Hall of Fame, maybe Vinny Jones creeps into it. But a Premier League Hall of Fame, I don't know. Maybe for that one appearance up at St James's Park when he went in goal because Paul Heald was sent off. But I don't think that he really is warranted to be in the Hall of Fame for a Premier League.
And to be fair to Vinny, he would agree with that. Let's be fair, he would agree that he wasn't the greatest player. Vinny Jones has made extraordinary career out of being a pretty average footballer and having a great career, and being a pretty average actor and having a great career. I don't know how he's done it, but he's done a great job. But in terms of what he meant to our club and just how good he was, to me, Chris Perry's people are welcome to disagree with me, but I'm standing by that. You're not going to convince me that Chris Perry shouldn't be our... See, if every club had... Every club that's played in the Premier League had one player to pick from, he'd be mine all day long. That was just very simple. I thought that's going to be a very difficult question to answer, but it turned out to be very easy. George may have not even seen Chris Perry play for us.
I remember Chris Perry scoring up at Old Trafford. It was sandwiched between the FA Cup ties, wasn't it, in that 96-97 season. You drew the first game at Old Trafford, took them back to Selhurst Park at the time, and that's when Schmeichel scored right in the dying moments. He was miles offside, but scored an incredible acrobatic overhead kick. But sandwiched in between those two games, there was a league game at Old Trafford, which Manchester United won. But Chris Perry, I think, might have put Wimbledon ahead or equalised, but he scored up at Old Trafford.
Also scored at Derby in the game that was abandoned due to floodlight failure, August 97. There you go. So he had a goal to there. But that Schmeichel overhead kick didn't count, by the way.
I know. I said he was miles offside. Scored acrobatic. Okay, fine. Yeah, that's all right, mate. Yeah, I got it.
Didn't hear that. But no, it keeps cutting out. I don't hear every word you're saying. I'm hearing about every two of every three words. So that was the one I missed. But people forget that was disallowed. But yeah, I've Chris Perry all day long. But we've had some very, very good players. I mean, you could have a comedy answer, like Martin Andresen or Kjetil Vaile, a Norwegian import who didn't play a game for three seasons. But Chris Perry deserves to be in there anyway. But I think he's probably one of the best English-born players to never play for England, for any club.
Okay, so that's Kevin Boris's answer. Now, George, I know that you're potentially not really qualified to answer this question, but from learning the history of the club, which no doubt you've immersed yourself in over the years, you must have an idea of who you might like to go into it.
Yeah, well, I think the obvious answer, as Kevin has said, is Chris Perry. He was just the giant of the club at the time, proper Wimbledon player, and has achieved great things, you know, after leaving us. And that's, I think, to get into a Premier League Hall of Fame, you need to look at achieving things with multiple clubs and going from, you know, smaller clubs to bigger clubs, and Chris Perry achieved that. And like I said, he deserved an England cap. He should have got an England cap. There's no idea how he didn't get one from looking at videos of him playing. But you look at him, and I mean, talking about sort of comedy answers, I can't believe sort of Carl Court and John Hartson didn't get him mentioned, Kevin.
No.
No, they're not getting a mention, are they?
Oh, am I supposed to continue? No. Why would John Hartson get a mention?
As probably the greatest value signing of all time.
Yes. Broke our transfer record by about £5 million. And I will happily say this to his face. John Hartson did not play particularly well for us. Didn't score that many goals. Left us very, very quickly when we went down. No, sorry, John Hartson. The other players, there are players who do deserve. Hans Seegers was great for us in the three seasons we had him. But then, of course, the I'm not going to name it, the scandal.
The
he was
scandal,
in,
yes.
Didn't help him at all.
Absolutely.
But let's call it the scandal that didn't help him at all. John Scales would be another one who went on to play for Tottenham and Liverpool. He'd have to be up there. But you look at Dean Holdsworth, Efner Koku, we did have good players. But the whole point, and Marcus Gale, he may be listening, sorry, Marcus. The whole point of our club and why it was such an amazing feat to stay in the top division of English football for 14 years, as we did, was that we didn't have those star players. We didn't have any, buying John Hartson for £7.5 million was ridiculous. It almost kind of spoiled everything we'd stood for, that we didn't have those kind of players. We didn't have that kind of money. We didn't have the home crowd. We didn't have our own ground. And we still finished in the top half of every division, every season except one. And then we went down. So I just don't think we... It's not that we don't deserve players in the Hall of Fame. It's just that the club should be there, not one player, except Chris Perry.
Except Chris Perry. I remember John Hartson's defining moment being that, wasn't it, an away game at Bradford. You lost 3-0 in that season, eventually, where you went down. He got sent off, didn't he? Yeah, terrible. It's just one of those clubs that doesn't quite work out for you. We'll move on from this, but just to finish, the player that I'd vote for, just because of my early fantasy football memories, always used to win me loads of points, Gary Elkins. Great player, Kevin. Great player.
Yes, he was. Yeah, again, Gary Elkins would happily admit this himself, not the most talented player, but he had pretty much everything you want from a second choice right back. He was never first choice. He's always Terry Phelan's number two, and then he was whoever came after him, I forget now, but he was never first choice really. But he never let us down. A tough chap is Gary Elkins. I'm going to call him, he's a hard player. Some of the tackles he went in for, you wouldn't even see in an MMA fight these days. But he was great. We loved him. He's been down to the club a few times and he gets a hero's welcome. I have a T-shirt with a picture of Gary Elkins' face on. I mean, he wasn't even my favourite player. He's just that iconic. He summed up everything that our club was, so you make the best of what you've got.
Absolutely. OK, well, thank you for your answers, gents. Thoroughly enjoyed that segment of the show. And we'll move on now to Gillingham. They're next up, George. And I mentioned it at the top. I believe they have the best run in the EFL at the moment in terms of going unbeaten. 15 games and counting now for Steve Evans's men. I think that started after a defeat to AFC Wimbledon, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It was when we beat them on the 23rd of November. That was what kick-started the run they're on at the moment. But Gillingham are a club where, despite their sort of great record, we've got an okay record against them. And for us, it's about exploiting that, trying to make sure we go in, start the game well, install that fear, and make them remember. Because Barry Fuller, one of our ex-players, said that what's driving this winning run is the feeling they had after losing to us. And so it's so important that we put them mentally into that game where they're back losing at King's Meadow. And if we can do that, we've got a good chance of getting a result out of that game. And you look at it, we've got our motivations because of obviously the Gillingham manager, who I don't think you'll be able to find someone to put a positive word in for him. But it's, I think
he would. He could.
He'd put in several. But I think one of the main things is that we've got to go and start the game well. But the main concerning thing for me going into this game is the referee, John Busby, who seems to give a horrendous handball decision against us every time us. And for me, that is just, it took all sort of hope I had of getting anything out of that game. It took it all away when I saw he's the referee, because I know we'll have a blatant handball decision given, sort of not for us yet again. And he's probably cost us about 6 points over the last 2 years through horrendous handball decisions.
You really don't like refs, do you,
George? Good point,
George.
I like referees who are competent, which is why it seems I don't like many.
What are you saying on this
Mike,
one, Kevin?
We like Mike Dean. I know George is a young chap and very impressionable and kind of prone to hyperbole, but on this occasion he's absolutely right. Busby is an absolutely shocking referee. He gets vast amounts of decisions wrong and does the annoying thing of then smiling. So when the players have a go at him for missing a blatant handball, he will smile. Fans have a go at him for missing things, he laughs and points at his badge, like, well, I'm the referee. Yeah, we know you are, but we're not sure why. But you look at someone like Mike Dean. I know Mike Dean gets a lot of bad press, but he's an exceptionally good referee. The top ones are the top referees for a reason. I would love for one weekend to swap and a Premier League get the referees we get and we get theirs. We had it 1 year I think it's March 2012 when there was an international break. We had Mike Dean do a away against Bristol Rovers. I didn't even spot that it was him because he just wasn't involved in the game. The game flowed. He was giving decisions and we just thought, because that Mike Dean? Didn't even look. But he was that good, we didn't even have to look in the programme to see who it was. Now, as you said, we look at who the referee is before the game. 2 days before we see it's John Busby. We think, oh no. As George says, there'll be a handball decision that goes against us that will be absolutely will incense us on that, what I call the insult to Brian Moore's memory stand behind the goal. That last time we were there, that there was a couple of bad decisions that went against us. That thing almost fell down. If John Busby does that again, he could be it could be an unpleasant sight. But there are referees that you know you're going to bet a bad day from. It's him, it's Trevor Kettle, it's Chris Sargent,
don't forget Breakspear. There you go.
Those four referees, I don't know how they have their jobs. Generally, if I was that bad at my job, I wouldn't be in it.
Right, Kevin, anyway, very quickly over. Before you go, it's been great having you on. I just need the score prediction from you. What are you saying?
I'm going to go for a typical Gillingham 2, Wimbledon 2.
Gillingham 2.
That'll be the fourth time.
Wimbledon 2. Kevin Boris, thank you very much for joining us today. George Jones?
I think it'll be a close game. I think it'll also be a draw. I'm saying 1-1.
1-1. Right, we'll give you all the reaction from that next week on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show, 10 p.m. here on Love Sport. See you then.
Wombles are tidy and wombles are clean. Underground, overground, wombling free. The wombles of Wimbledon, common are we.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.